still feel the pull of his desperation, his need to achieve the task he set out to accomplish. He fights for his people, his mother's people, the woman who took him in as her own. "Do you believe me now?" he asks. I nod. I don't trust my voice. "Luzhou is not a place where Shenongshu care to visit," he goes on to say. "But perhaps one day you will join me there, and you can teach us about your art. It's a beautiful place, even with its reputation." His offer startles me. I remember the revulsion that caused him to pull away when he found out what I was capable of in Azalea House. "It's not," he blinks. "It's not for the reason you believe." He does not finish his thought, for the simple act of remembering draws it back again. The ghostly strains of a flute floating in the air, the remnants of the golden key shimmering once again into being, forces our connection back together, sharply, until we both gasp at the force of it. He tries to fall back, to sever the memory, but it's too late. We return to the garden. The dagger pointed at his heart. His words that follow. "I wonder what the people of Jia will think of a regent who is hiding the death of an emperor. I wonder if they will accept a princess who sits on a throne of lies." The princess sinks back in her seat, face devoid of color. "The emperor is dead." I gasp at the revelation. The mist quickly parts as he closes the distance between us. His hands grab my shoulders. "Listen, this is important," he hisses. I can feel his whole body trembling. "Did you put something in the tea? Did you put in more golden key?" I start to shake my head. "No." And then I stop, because that would be a lie, and he would be able to sense it. The silver needle points both ways. "I don't know. It wasn't the silver needle. I think it was from before. Something the golden key left behind." "It's dangerous," he says. "You have to forget what you heard. I didn't understand. I underestimated your power." The wind picks up, whistling around us. We are caught in the dizzying space between memory and present. "They will kill you." He's so close. His expression wild, afraid. "I do not believe the Shenongshu are capable of resurrection."
"You believe it to be true?"
I whisper, not wanting to believe the palace able to contain such a large secret. His hands drop away from me. The connection quivers between us like the plucked string of a zither. "I've been in the capital for a few weeks," he says, turning away so I can only see the side of his face. "Watching to see what comes in and out of the palace. The last report said the emperor appeared gravely ill, but now I'm not sure what Jin is doing. Waiting to see who will reveal themselves as a potential threat? Who will offer an alliance?" Kang paces in front of me, all composure lost. "They will kill you, do you understand? They will not hesitate." I hear the sound of thunder in the distance, even though the sky was clear before we entered this dreamscape. The intensity of his emotions having conjured the wind, whipping our hair across our faces. Lifting, spinning us up until our feet are dangling above the ghostly forms of our bodies. My stomach revolts at the sudden movement. I have to hold us both together before our souls are severed and we are unable to find our way back to our physical forms.
"Kang!"
I call out, fighting against the wind to maintain my grip on his shoulder. Reaching up, I dig my fingers into his neck at the pressure point there. His eyes burn into mine. "My name. You wanted to know my name, right? It's Ning. Zhang Ning. Zhang Ning," he repeats softly. With a rush, we return into our bodies, a dizzying fall. I sag against the stone table for support, uncertain if my legs can hold me up any longer. Across from me, Kang pants as if he's run a great distance. "I'm just a girl from Su," I say to him. "Who will believe me, even if I try to tell them?" A peculiar expression crosses his face. "Ning," he sighs, and a shiver runs through me. "You, You have power. More than you know. More power than those foolish nobles in their grand residences, protected from the hardships of the world. You know what it's like out there, living each day wondering if you will survive the next. You have hungered. He says this with an edge to his voice, reminding me he could have been a prince if his father had succeeded in taking over the throne. He would be the one residing in the inner palace instead, dressed in silk. In Mother's stories, princes never had a happy ending. They were exchanged for skinned cats, stolen away in the dark of night. They were killed in their beds while another power ascended. It is dangerous to be a prince. When she comes into power, her advisors will suggest she rid herself of her opponents. I left without my father's knowledge, hoping she could at least spare the lives of my mother's people. He looks into the distance. I hoped I could offer myself as a hostage, an assurance, that the people of Lijol will swear fealty as long as she does not do us harm. Lijol has suffered enough because of my family.
What will you do then if she does not agree? I ask. His jaw clenches.
We hope she will be different, or else we will fight to defend what is ours. She... Don't, I warn. The effects of Silver Needle are still active.
Don't say anything you don't want to tell me.
Kung hesitates, then nods. I hope she will walk a peaceful path. He is a well-trained swordsman, and if the people of the Emerald Isles are the same, he speaks of rebellion. An empire on the precipice of change. Alliances shifting at the whims of those in power, just like the ascended emperor cut a swath through the provinces to secure the throne, just like his sons fought for control. One rules, one is banished. Anything is possible now that the emperor is dead. We all have people we care about, those we would give our lives for. It puts us in danger or makes us dangerous. In a way, I resent the village I come from. I resent the ties that bind me there because the people there remember my mother returning to the village, unwed and pregnant. They know my awkward ways, my ineptitude for social niceties, my many mistakes. But they are also a part of me. The dirt under my nails, the blood in my veins. I belong with those tea trees, the rice fields, the clay of the riverbanks, the fire in the kilns. I am selfish, and I know now that I will no longer apologize for it. Let the world burn, if Shu can live. The gong sounds. The hour of the thief. I have to go, Kung says, yet he makes no effort to move. You should, I say, yearning for him to stay. I'll see you again. It sounds like a promise. He bows, a courtly gesture wasted on someone like me. Yet I can feel the phantom pull of the thread still humming between us. I can feel it long after he disappears into the night. Long after it feels like he was never there at all. Chapter 16. We gather to meet the judges at midday, the sun beating high above our heads as we cross the grand courtyard. Without the crowds, without the soldiers, I feel like a tiny ant crawling across the large space. Minister Song greets us at the top of the marble steps. Marquis Kuang standing beside him. I take care to keep myself at the back of the group, to hide my face so he does not suddenly recall that I am the maid responsible for the commotion in his residence 2 days before. The roof of the covered balcony shields us from the sun, and we can look over the courtyard of promising future to the rooftops of the palace and then the city beyond. The view is spectacular, too much to take in all at once. A black pagoda stands in the distance, the watchful tower looking over the city's red-tiled rooftops.
You stand before the Hall of Eternal Light, Minister Song's voice brings us back to the challenge at hand. This is where the next round will be held. the competition will no longer be open to the public.
This is not a surprise, but the competitors still murmur at each other before the minister holds up one hand to silence us.
Still, it is a great honor to be received in this hall. It was built for the ascended emperor, to both honor and humble him. From this vantage point, he will remember his purpose, to protect the people of Daxi, and to remember that even the sun can be shot down from the sky.
I remember the legend of the archer who once rose to the greatest heights. He shot down 9 of the arrogant sons of the Sky Emperor when the earth was on fire beneath them. Just like the archers who attempted to kill the princess. But no one dares say that aloud. Minister Song gestures to the man beside him.
Marquis Kuang.
The nobleman steps forward, spreading his arms with a jovial grin.
I present to you a simple enough task.
A servant comes forward and bows, holding a tray on which 5 cups are balanced.
You will have 5 cups to choose from. 1 cup is safe. The other 4 cups contain poison.
He waves and the servant backs away.
Poison, he declares again, delighted at this challenge.
But I know the truth. This competition is rigged in his favor, ensuring that his preferred competitors will have his assistance and the guidance of the esteemed Tian. 2 old men playing at courtly games, confident they will still be in power when a new dawn rises over Daxi. Does he know the emperor is dead? Do they all know?
What sort of poison will you face?
He continues theatrically.
Will it be one that will rack your body with unspeakable pain, make you bleed from every orifice, cause you to fall asleep forever?
The other Shennongtu fret at this, but no one seems particularly afraid. It's the most basic training of a Shennongtu, the discernment of common poisons. They're expected to be able to identify them by scent, taste, and appearance. But I know that today's challenge will involve the use of the silver needle. It cannot merely be a simple test of skill.
I have arranged for the assistance of the finest entertainers in Jia.
His smile is slippery as an eel.
A bell rings and 5 figures walk in from the side of the hall. 5 beautiful women dressed in white skirts and white bodices, their sashes containing the faintest hint of color. Their shoulders wrapped in wisps of shimmering gauze. They tuck their hands beside their hips, gracefully arch their wrists, and curtsy in unison to the marquis, ethereal in their beauty, like they have stepped directly from a painting depicting the star goddesses of the celestial palace. I'm sure my own mouth is open in awe, as are many of my fellow competitors. The marquis claps, round cheeks flushed.
Some of the greatest beauties of Jia, from azalea, peony, lotus, orchid, and chrysanthemum, 5 of the oldest tea houses in the capital. They are apprentices like you, seeking to make a name for themselves.
The competitors whisper among themselves. Some of the men look as if they wish they could swallow the young women whole.
These ladies are trained in the intricacies of the tea ceremony, the marquis continues. You will prepare a cup for them to drink, and they will prepare you 5 cups in turn. You will be permitted to select only 1 cup out of the 5, and that is the one you will drink from.
How is that fair?
One of my fellow Shennongtu protests.
How are we supposed to discern the poison?
That is an excellent question, the marquis smirks. The emperor requires a shennongshi who will be able to assist him in court, who will be able to assess danger from delegates and tributes by reading a room.
This is not a challenge at all,
another young man speaks, stepping forward from the group with a bow. With fierce brows and a sharp nose, he is striking in appearance, his shaved head indicating he may have been dedicated to a monastery of one of the gods.
Beg pardon, honored one. It is simple enough to determine whether a person is lying without the use of tea.
I suspect he may be from Yun province due to his heavy accent.
In the venerable competition on Wuling Mountain, do you demonstrate your skills only by fighting to the death?
The Marquis snaps, his displeasure clear. He does not like to be questioned.
Last year, the finale of that competition was a tower rite. The competitors ascended a bamboo tower and sparred with their bare hands, without any weapons, in order to determine who would be the victor. Green Snake and Frozen Snow.
He names two of the most revered martial arts warriors who have come out of Wuling Academy.
Their weapons are spear and sword, but Green Snake won the competition against Frozen Snow without her spear, in direct hand-to-hand combat. It was a test of their balance, intelligence, and endurance, not only a test of brute strength.
Marquis Kuang's expression turns cold.
It is not a matter of who is able to use tea like a trained dog. We are not looking for those who can pour tea with the greatest flourish. We are looking for someone who is capable of fitting in with the court, providing sound counsel. And I have not mentioned the last and final rule of this competition.
We all wait expectantly. Standing beside him, the entertainers offer bland, pretty smiles, unaffected by this demonstration of temper from a powerful man.
You will be given enough tea leaves for a single cup. Enough for you to tell truth from lie, without a word being uttered.
Confused mutters sweep through the gathered Shennongtu. The competitor from Yun bows deeply in acquiescence to the difficulty of the challenge and retreats back into the line. Now we understand this is a true test of our skill. A single cup of tea to read the mind of a stranger, to operate in silence with only the magic to speak for us.
Any other questions?
The Marquis asks mockingly, his slippery smile returning. We all cast our eyes to the ground. No one else dares to say anything.
Good, he says. I will see you back in the Hall of Eternal Light when the next gong rings.
With a sweep of his sleeve, he exits the balcony, the entertainers following behind him. We return to our residences to be made presentable for the judges. The Shennongtu of our residence are escorted to the bathhouse, where we bathe in great tubs scented with flowers. Servants swarm around us, pinning and pulling our hair and dotting makeup on our freshly scrubbed faces. I feel like I'm about to be roasted for a feast, I grumble as two maids pull hard on my sash. Lian rolls her eyes and selects a jeweled pin from the offered tray. Shu would have loved to be made a fuss of. She would have spent all her time in the embroidery department, learning new techniques from the seamstresses. But for me, the robes feel restrictive at my throat and my back, making it difficult to breathe, strangling me with continuous thoughts of my own inferiority and doubt. The Hall of Eternal Light is constructed of wood panels, the ones I briefly glimpsed before with Tian. The windows are open to the views all around, the greatest vantage point of Jia. A gold statue of a horse with its saddle glittering with gems rears against a wall beside the statue of an archer on one knee, arms straining from pulling at a bow aimed high for the sky. There is enough room to entertain hundreds in this hall, so the 17 tables, one for each competitor, barely fill the space.
Her Royal Highness, Princess Yingzhen,
the herald announces, and we all sink to our knees. Please, stand. The princess dismisses the formality immediately, and we rise awkwardly again to our feet to watch her stride across the room. She is still a sight to behold, cloaked in a robe embroidered to look like peacock feathers, the fabric moving from side to side like the blinking of a thousand eyes. Under that glorious robe, she wears a slim sheath of dark blue, a sash of glimmering gold at her waist. She settles herself in a carved chair at the front of the room, the wings of a phoenix expanding behind her.
Will you risk your life for the chance to serve Daxi? Marquis Kuang asks. You can walk away now if you are afraid of picking the wrong cup.
We lose 5 in number immediately. They hurry out the door after bowing to the princess, mumbling their apologies and their thanks for no one to hear. Kung's memory returns to me. The princess poured him 2 cups and bade him drink. Even though he is a skilled martial artist, he had only his words to spar with, and only his words saved him. Yet still he drank. He took the risk on behalf of his people. Now I face a similar test. Those of us remaining are told to approach the long table on the other side of the hall and pick up the tray labeled with our name. I pick up my tray with reverent hands, always mindful to treat my tools with respect. The teaware is even more beautiful than the sets in the residence. The porcelain is so thin, it feels like it could shatter with a breath. At the bottom of the bowl lie loose strands of slender, bare leaves. I stare at the tea leaves, not understanding. My face turns hot, blood rushing to my head. My vision blurs, then refocuses as I blink. The leaves are missing the fine silver fuzz that gives the tea its name. This is not silver needle. Someone put a different tea in my cup. Is everything all right? There's a graceful hand on my arm. My nose fills with the delicate perfume of lilies. I stare up at the entertainer assigned to me, waiting for me to walk with her to our table. The Marquis crosses the room, drawing attention to my hesitation. If you are afraid, there is no need to proceed further in this competition. Should I call out the error? But it would be of no use if he was the one to place the wrong tea leaves on my tray, and it would reveal that I had assistance from someone in the kitchens. He gets closer and closer, and I know what I must do. I turn and allow the entertainer to lead me to our table, and I catch my foot on an empty stool. I let myself fall.
Chapter 17. The tray strikes the floor with a crack, and the cup bounces out and shatters. I land sprawled on the floor in a heap. My dignity is wounded, but better that than the alternative. The girl from the tea house looks shocked, her mouth open in an O, before taking a moment to regain her composure. It's a true accomplishment to disturb a tea house apprentice so.
Clumsy girl!
The Marquis hurries to my side and looks down at me in disgust. That tea costs more than a year's wages for even a palace servant. How dare you waste such a precious resource? I do my best to appear chastised, while inside I recite a litany of curses at the man.
The girl from Su, he drawls. I didn't recognize you until now, but you wouldn't know anything about how valuable this tea is being from such a place.
The hate boils in my veins as I stare at the Marquis's treacherous smirk. He relishes my humiliation. Come, let me help you. My entertainer assists me off the floor. The servants step in quickly to sweep up the broken pieces of the teaware. A part of me wants to throw myself at the Marquis and wipe that smug look off his face, to show him I'm not someone he can torment. But the grip on my arm holds fast. A warning. I look down, focusing on the embroidery on her sleeve, fighting to stay in control. I recognize the flowers. She is from Peony House. I take a deep breath. I apologize, Your Eminence, I murmur. My hands are not accustomed to handling such fine wares, and I embarrassed myself. I can feel the entertainer's relief as her hands release me. The Marquis's cheek twitches as he contemplates his next move. He would love to dismiss me from the competition outright, but even he would need proper cause to do so. The girl from Peony House curtsies low, her tone low and deferent. Please, allow me to bring forth another tray belonging to a competitor who has forfeited the competition.
Do not let this trouble your eminence. It is only a cup, nothing more.
Fine. Marquis Kuang reluctantly waves us away. Help the girl.
I sit and wait for the young woman to bring over another tray to the table. I realize how close I was to snapping and how she pulled me back. I am grateful for that, but I cannot acknowledge her at this moment without risking both of us further. She sits in front of me, her features now smooth and devoid of emotion, a pleasant mask. In the capital, I feel exposed. My accent, my walk, my clothes, everything betraying me. But I had a lifetime of freedom where I could do what I pleased. My mother, who never asked me to be anything other than who I am, flaws and all. What would it be like to always have to wear this careful face? I check the leaves one more time, half expecting the bowl to contain the same falsehood. But I recognize the characteristic fuzz. Letting out a shaky sigh, I focus now on steadying my hands, on the pour of the hot water, the rise and fall in a sparkling stream. The spinning vortex shows the truth. The tea leaves are pointing to the center. The lid is carefully placed on top, the tea allowed to steep. Someone tried to disqualify me, leaving me vulnerable to poison, and I would not have known if Steward Yang had not helped me. Am I absolutely certain it was the Marquis? I forced myself to focus on the steam instead of turning around to see who else could be watching me, eager to see if their plot has succeeded. I pour the tea into the cup and gesture for the entertainer to take her sip. She does so with delicate movements, covering her face with the sleeve of her other arm, part of her performance. Something heavy hits the floor behind me with a loud thud, making me jump. I turn to see one of the Shennong Tu lying on the ground. Two soldiers come in without prompting to carry the prone body out of the room. Despite the rule of silence, whispers ripple among the other competitors. Questions of, is he dead? And what will happen to him?
I would advise you to focus on your own fate, competitors, the Marquis announces, his enjoyment at our discomfort apparent.
I turn back to the entertainer, who has already begun her ceremony, unaffected by all the disturbances around her. The rinsing of the cups, the preparation of the pot, the wait during the steep. The light fragrance of a bright spring green tea wafts toward me, a perfect selection for an afternoon drink. I return my attention to the five cups before me, all identical in color, the same painted design of peach blossoms running along the outer curve, all appearing to be empty. She pours the tea into each, steam curling gently above the surface. I stare at them, willing them to speak to me. How does one become an apprentice of Shennong? A question rises unbidden in my mind, one of Mother's basic lessons. The magic sounds like ringing to my ears. You may sense it differently. Is it a taste? A brush against the skin? Mother had sat us both down in front of her while she poured the tea for us. Shu gasped, said she could see it. Colorful lines being pulled from her hands, like fabric from a loom. But I smelled it distinctly. It smelled like pomelo flowers. I had banished that memory when I thought I would never pour another cup of magic again. But it returns to me now, waiting for direction. I am aware from last night that the silver needle does not need long to take effect. But was it only because of Kong's previous connection with me? Wrenched into place by the golden key? Slowly, so as not to startle her, I reach for the entertainer's hand, resting my palm on top of her knuckles. She tenses but does not pull away. The magic spills over to her, making the connection. I learned at this moment that I do not need to also drink the tea in order to wield the magic. If the receiver ingests it, then it is sufficient. The fingers of my other hand hover over the first cup. My eyelids flutter and I am suddenly overwhelmed by a luxurious heaviness of the limbs. The lull in the thoughts before sleep overtakes me. I snatch my hand back,
and the feeling dissipates. The next cup sparks a sensation of rolling within my stomach, like the unsteadiness of being on the ferry. This one causes vomiting. The third, nothing. Empty. I move to the fourth to test whether the magic is true, and a sharp pain strikes my temple, like someone has stabbed a dagger into my skull. I quickly snatch the third cup, swallowing its contents in one gulp, and place it back on the table. My breath quickens as my gaze flashes upward to meet the eyes of the girl from Peony House. I can see the barest, almost imperceptible curve at the corners of her eyes. I already know from that almost smile. I pick the right cup. Her eyes flick downward briefly, and I realize I'm still holding her hand. I let go and return my hands to my lap, suddenly feeling awkward. My senses still remain my own. Sleep does not overtake me. Pain does not wash over me. Looking around, I see the number of Shenongtu continues to diminish, until the ones who remain are told to rise and approach the marquee.
"You have survived the round," he says, the golden hooves of the horse statue rearing above his head. "From 50-some to 17 to 8.
His eyes land on me, still standing before him, and a scowl crosses his face. I wish a sudden strong wind would topple the statue onto his head, but the heavens do not comply.
"The next round will commence in 3 days' time, at the start of summer. We welcome the longer days, a time for everything to begin anew. You will be given further instructions tomorrow morning in preparation. After that, you can take a much-deserved rest. Congratulations."
Even though his words are celebratory, something about them makes my blood run cold. We leave the month of lengthening, when daylight begins to stretch later into the evening. We approach the start of summer, but where the season is supposed to promise warmth and growth, it seems to have brought forth continued unrest. The questions uttered by the princess in her own garden echo in my mind as we leave the Hall of Eternal Light. Whose life? Whose death? Only time will tell. I'm determined to find the steward this afternoon. It's possible she was the one who was tasked by the Marquis to change out my tea leaves. Perhaps her clue was also a warning. She said she was the one who sourced the tea for the competition, so she is the most likely person to give me the answer I'm looking for. Lian and I promised we would not return to the kitchens again, but I set forth with only one purpose. I will not involve anyone else in my plans. I want to find Tiern, but encounter Small Wu instead. He's busy twisting and pulling more dough, sweat dripping off his forehead at the strenuous work. "Do you know where I can find Steward Yang?" I ask. He stops and wipes his face with a cloth before answering.
"At this time, she's usually reviewing the kitchen accounts in her room. Go past the fish department and through the far gate to the women's quarters. Give them my name, or find Abing if you run into any trouble."
I duck my head in thanks and hurry through the twisting corridors past the kitchens, keeping to myself. No one stops me, everyone busy attending to their own tasks. Steward Yang is my only connection here to my mother, my hope of finding out more about her past. I don't want her to be the one who betrayed me, but I know her loyalty is to her immediate family first, and then to her staff in the kitchens. I'm only a disruption to her, a potential threat. I enter the women's quarters and walk down the open-air hallway, checking each door. The ranks of those who reside within are hung on plaques beside each doorway, but no names are recorded. Her room is near the end of the quarters, only one plaque beside the doorway. With her position as supervisor of the kitchens, she is afforded her own private room. The door is open, and through it, I see her sitting at a table, brush in hand. I raise my fist and rap on the door twice. She starts, turning her head to look at me. Then she frowns. "I thought I told you not to come to the kitchens again." A part of me shrivels, wanting to apologize. But another part of me is ready for answers,
and ready to tear things apart to find them. I cross her threshold without invitation and stand in front of her with my arms crossed. She tosses her brush to the table, prepared to throw me out for intruding in her space. "Did you switch out the silver needle on my tray?" I ask her, imagining my words like fists, striking the first blow. "Was that why you warned me? Because you had already been tasked by the Marquis of Anhu to sabotage me?" Her expression changes from anger to confusion. "The Marquis? Why would I help him?" She curls her lip. Then, as she ponders this, the reason I am standing there seems to dawn on her. "Close the door. We can't be seen together by the others." Even though I bristle at her forceful tone, I still obey. "Now, sit down." She points at the bamboo chair across from her when I return. "Tell me everything." Chapter 18. I tell her what happened during the second round of the competition. The rules, what we were tasked to do, and my discovery that it was the wrong tea in my cup. Her face grows pale as I recount the events, her finger tapping a frantic beat on the table. "You are certain it was not Silver Needle?" she asks. I nod. "But how?" she ponders, deep lines forming on her brow. "One of the royal physicians handed me the tea leaves, and I prepared all the trays. It must have been one of the servants." She looks perturbed at this realization. "It seems like the stars have different plans for you. Your mother fled this place and told me she would never return. Now you are here in her stead." She shakes her head. "Ah, Yiting, how could fate have been so cruel to you?" It seems like she genuinely cared for my mother. I think they must have been friends. "You said she left because of a scandal. What was the reason?" Memories are all I have left of her, and I'm desperate for any other knowledge. "It was a bitter cold winter, and the Empress was pregnant with a princess," she tells me. "The Empress fell ill, as did the midwife who was in charge of her care. Same with many of the royal physicians. Your mother used magic from Shen Nong to save her, and she found favor in the eyes of the Emperor and the Empress." My uncle, my mother's brother, had always bragged about how he could have attended the Imperial College, but chose to remain with the family business instead. He always looked down on my mother's profession, even though the process to become a Shen Nong Shu was similarly selective, if not more so. Why did my mother never mention that she attended to the Empress herself? "The Emperor had arranged for a suitable match for Yiting. For all who serve at the palace may leave at the age of 25 to start their own families. But during that winter, she fell in love with your father, an up-and-coming imperial physician, and he with her. And to refuse the Emperor's blessing means a death sentence." I envision in my mind this younger version of my mother and father, with their own dreams, their imagined futures lit up in front of them like lanterns glowing in the sky. The tenderness in my father's face as he watches her while she shapes pottery for the kiln. The way she laughs when they prepare herbs to dry in the storeroom. "With the permission of the Empress, your mother began to secretly study for her Shen Nong Shi trials. She managed to win the attention of the esteemed Xu when he visited the palace and gained a token for admittance to the next trials at Hanxia. She returned from the academy with her name inscribed in the Book of Tea, and she asked for an audience with the Emperor and the Empress. She requested that they honor the boon they offered when she saved the life of the Empress and the Princess, asking to be freed from the engagement the Emperor had arranged for her. The Emperor was furious, but the Empress was understanding. She helped your mother flee the palace in one of her own carriages when Yiting admitted she was with child. And she returned to her family in Su," I say to myself softly. "She gave birth to me a few months later." This is why father's mouth turns into a hard line when I ask about his family. Why mother's face always smoothed into a blank mask when Shu would wonder aloud why some children had two sets of grandparents, while we had only one.
I'm not even sure where Father's family is. All I know is they are in one of the prefectures west of Jia. But we have never met them. His name must have been stricken from their family books in disgrace. The implication of this knowledge stabs me in the chest. If Mother hadn't gotten pregnant, she could have continued her comfortable life in the palace. As a favorite of the Empress, she would have served her as Shenongshu and advisor. She would never have needed to toil in the fields. She would have walked among the nobles and the court officials. You are halfway through the competition, girl, the steward scoffs. You are just as intelligent as your mother. She risked everything to keep you. You know that, right? She fought for you, and you are here following her legacy. You are the symbol of her strength. Be careful. Don't get yourself killed in the process. I stand and mumble my thanks. I stumble over my feet in my haste to get out of that suddenly suffocating room, heavy with the burden of my new knowledge. To my relief when I return, I find our room empty. I sit down heavily on my bed, narrowly missing crushing the note Lian left for me. Dear Ning, I have been called to be plucked like a chicken and paraded in front of musty old officials as part of Father's diplomacy obligations. I will see you tomorrow. Even though I am choking on tears, I still chuckle. Lian's brashness, her carefree demeanor, feels so similar to my mother, forging her own destiny. I should follow their examples instead of wallowing in my own self-pity. I pick up Mother's pendant, wrap it in Shu's handkerchief, and tuck it away in my sash. For them, I will be strong. Without Lian's company, I debate whether I should still join the other competitors for the evening meal. In the end, hunger wins out. I promised Steward Yang I would not associate with the kitchen staff any longer, and I'm not as confident as Lian, able to request extra portions from the serving staff without hesitation. Each night, our meals are presented at the fragrant spring garden, under the cover of the cluster of pavilions that sit in the middle of an ornamental garden paved with white stones. As our numbers grow fewer, we now eat under the central pavilion, separated by two stone tables. Lanterns sway in the breeze, lighting up the paths, and the air is scented by gardenia flower blooms. Xiao holds court at one table with those who remain of his friends, whose faces I have committed to memory. One of the loudest and most boorish among them is Guo Ming, who is present in the residence of the Marquis. Even though the drunken buffoon who grabbed me was eliminated in the second round of the competition, I see all of them as complicit in the scheming. I've taken to avoiding them at every turn, casting my eyes down and continuing to behave as the quiet girl from the countryside who poses no threat. Today we feast on sweet and sour fish, the carp cut into beautiful flower patterns and then fried, curling into petals. It's bathed in a vividly red sauce cooked with vinegar. Giant lion's head meatballs, bigger than my fist, have been cooked in their own juices, then ladled into bowls to be accompanied by greens and a light broth sweetened by mushrooms. Even something as simple as carrots and cucumbers have been turned into flowers as accompaniments, so that the platter appears to be a garden in bloom. My head is still in turmoil from the revelations shared by the steward. What she told me explains why my parents were always so careful to keep Shu and me within the village, why they rarely traveled, and why they never wanted to be in attendance when the emperor visited a nearby town on one of his summer tours, why Father was so angry whenever I drew the attention of the soldiers. I'm so focused on my food, I don't notice I'm no longer alone until two fists strike the table in front of me. I jump, my spoon dropping out of my hand and hitting my bowl with a clatter. I look up, my mouth full of rice, only to see Xiao looking down at me with a disapproving glare. You lost me money today, girl, he drawls, his capital accent even more pronounced than usual. I can see over his shoulder the young men at the other table, elbowing each other and looking over at us, laughing. I swallow, confused. I don't know what you mean.
He put down an entire coin purse betting you would fail this round. One of his friends calls out, chortling. I'm glad you proved him wrong.
Heat flares in my face, and there's a tightness in my chest. They're betting on who will win or lose?
It was pure luck that she passed.
Xiao turns back to me, regaining his composure. The lazy smile returns to his face. He dangles a small pouch in front of me, shaking it until I can hear the coins clink within.
Why don't we make it more of a challenge for the rest of us? Take these coins, then you can leave. Return to the poor village you came from. Save yourself the embarrassment of defeat.
The pouch lands on the table with a clatter, the silver contained within spilling out. I stand up, knocking my stool down behind me, arms trembling at my sides. I look at the faces of the rest of the competitors at my table. All of them looked shocked, surprised, some amused, but no one speaks up for me. Slowly, I pick up the pouch, putting each coin back inside carefully. Weighing the pouch in my hand, I can tell there's more than enough in here to stock the entirety of my father's store. Ingredients to treat the villagers, to fill our kitchen shelves for months. I meet Charles' eyes, and he looks at me with growing amusement.
There's no shame in...
Pulling my arm back, I throw the pouch at Shaw as hard as I can. It hits him in the chest and lands on the stone floor below. Coins roll in every direction.
Keep betting against me,
I say to him, voice shaking only very slightly. I'd love to see what else you'll lose. Shao's eyes bulge as he steps forward, but even quicker, the Shennong Tu from Yun blocks his path with his arm.
Move out of my way, Wen Yi,
Shao hisses.
Careful, Shao, the monk drawls. You wouldn't want us to think you are feeling threatened by her, right?
Shao sputters at the absurdity of that thought, and I turn, fleeing, away from their mocking gazes, away from their ridicule. Charles' jeers remind me of my family's history, my disgraceful lineage, how I keep embarrassing my family at each turn. Like the time before the autumn rains, years ago, when the soldiers came to collect the harvest taxes, and my family grumbled about how they could not wait for them to leave. That night, I had searched for the corpse lilies in bloom, flowers that blossom only once every 6 years. I gathered as many of them as I could carry and placed them around the campsite, hoping their scent would repel the soldiers. In the morning, I woke to the sound of screams and smoke rolling down the hills. The soldiers had burned the fields, believing that the flowers had bloomed in the middle of the night, a bad omen. Our orchards were destroyed, along with half of our family's tea garden. The blackened sky, the smell of charred trees. I wake in the dark, thrashing. There is a heavy weight on my body, a shadow crouched at my legs. I swing my arms wildly at my attacker, but my reward is a heavy pressure on my chest. A hand closes over my throat and another over my mouth, smothering me. I consider, fleetingly, if it could be Kang, but the face above me is not the one who visits me in the night. She's a girl. Her hair is pulled up high above her head, kept back from her face with a band. But the rest of her hair spills over one shoulder, black waves brushing my face as she breathes. I know her now. The one who stands beside the princess. My name is Gao Ruyi, her whisper confirms her identity. I'm handmaiden to the princess. If I take my hand from your mouth, will you scream? I shake my head no, and the weight is lifted from my chest and throat when she rolls off me. I wheeze a little as my lungs protest the rough treatment. I can feel her watching me with intensity, looking for weaknesses. I know she has calculated how to silence me if I make the wrong move. The lantern light from the courtyard streams through the carved shutters, leaving patterns of light and shadow across her skin. The princess requests your presence, she says. Not a question, an order. Let me get dressed, I tell her,
a slight tremble in my voice. I cannot see her in my current state.
It won't be long, she says, dismissing my concerns. Throw on a cloak. That will be sufficient.
I step behind the dressing screen, fumbling with the ties of my cloak, questions tumbling inside my head, wondering how much the princess knows. If this is about my time in the kitchens, the accusations of the Marquis, or is it about my nightly conversations with Kang? I trudge behind the handmaiden, my feet feeling heavier with each step. She does not speak when we make our way through the corridors of the palace, past unfamiliar gates with soldiers standing guard. They bow their heads and allow us to pass without question until we reach an alcove with a sad-looking tree. I place my hand against the bark and sense that the life is being choked out of it, the leaves brown and crumbling. At the foot of the tree, there is a stone carving of a lion, a snarl on its face, one paw extended with claws out. Rui steps around the tree and touches the wall. In front of my eyes, a door opens, revealing a dark tunnel behind it. I gawk at it, marveling at how such a mechanism is possible, but she quickly pulls me through, shutting the opening behind me. We're enclosed in darkness. I reach out and touch the wall. Stone. With a strike of a match and the smell of sulfur tingling in my nose, Rui's face is illuminated by an ignited torch. We make our way deeper through the dark tunnel, me hurrying after her confident strides. She seems like someone who has passed through these passages many times before, navigating the turns until we reach a wall with an iron ring hanging from the nose of a stone boar, sharp tusks curving from its mouth. She pulls the ring and a door opens, revealing a moonlit garden. A figure, dressed in white, waits for us under the trees.
Chapter 19. The garden looks exactly like it did in Kang's memory. The weeping willow trailing leaves in the ground, the graceful dwarf pines in their round pots, and white decorative boulders placed around the perimeter in auspicious locations. The princess seated at the stone table, the branches of the plum tree behind her in full bloom. Approach, Rui says with a hand at my back. I take a step forward and kneel, touching my forehead to the cold stones. I could never have imagined this moment, even in Shu's most fanciful tales, that I would be standing before the princess, carrying a secret I am certain she does not want me to know. Rise, her voice instructs me. I stand to look into the face of the regent of Daxi, the heir to the throne. Her hair is missing the pins and combs that usually adorn it, falling loose around her face instead. She's dressed in a gown of pale purple, in a shade so light I had mistaken it initially as white. She appears to be the ethereal embodiment of the moon goddess, and I am the unworthy peasant. The girl from Su, she says with a wry smile. Does it mean amusement or distaste? I cannot tell. You are the Shen Nong Tu who has created a stir in this competition. I hide my hands behind my back, suddenly aware of my dirty nails and calloused skin. You have captured the attention of Marquis Kuang and also of Chancellor Zhou. The two of them have been in multiple debates about whether you should be permitted to remain in the competition, whether your presence is too disruptive in these times. Fierce anger flashes within me. Familiar names, familiar accusations. Troublemaker. I see something burning within you, she remarks. Tell me the truth. Why are you here? Do you dream of toppling the empire? I feign ignorance, believing it to be safer than the words of protest that I want to utter. I am not sure of what you speak, Highness, I say. If your purpose is to create unrest, then you have succeeded in your mission, the princess muses. But if you had so simple a goal, you would have left when given the opportunity. I want to win the competition, I tell her, recognizing that now is the time I need to defend myself
walking this precarious path between two people of ambition, the princess and the marquis. I am not working for anyone but myself. Her eyes bore into mine. Why? How much have they looked into the backgrounds of those who are present in the competition? I know with certainty that my mother's name is in the Book of Tea, but I still don't know if anyone else in the capital other than Steward Young knows of her death. I am only here for myself. My mother passed away this past winter, Highness. I have to offer enough of the truth, and I have already given up this information to the steward. My sister is ill. Without both of them, my family is struggling. Winning this competition, this position, will mean a better life for my family. But there is so much I want to ask her. About the poison, the shadow, how it all ties to my mother's death, how I want to find the person responsible and tear them apart with my bare hands. She contemplates this, searching my face as if she wants to carve the truth out of me. Do you understand the empire the Ascended Emperor wanted to build? A vision my grandmother upheld. A legacy my father continued to believe in. A better life for the people. Your people are starving, I think. They're angry, while you're deluding yourself with dreams of a grandiose empire. The princess laughs, a brittle sound. I see you do not believe me, and I should send you to the dungeons for that. I should drop to my knees, beg for her forgiveness, ensure my survival another day in this competition. Yet that is not who I am. It seems to go against my very nature, even if it dooms me. She senses my struggle and seems amused by it. Perhaps you are not lying. I should do as the Marquis suggests and have you whipped for your insolence. All of you are the same, I say. Afraid of the truth. Ruyi is immediately beside me, wrenching my arms behind my back, forcing me to drop to the ground. Do you understand my dilemma? Princess Yingjin looks down at me. I cannot have people like you creating unrest. I have to maintain order until my father's illness improves. Her pulse twitches at her throat. A beautiful lie. But then she pauses. What truth are you speaking of? Every season, taxes are expected of us. I say through gritted teeth, ignoring the painful twisting of my shoulder in Ruyi's grip. Even when the harvest is poor, even when there is nothing in our stores and our granaries. Do you think I am unaware of the reports? The princess snaps at me. Do you think it pleases me to know my people are suffering? Send me home and others will take my place, I tell her. We will demand to be heard. Watch yourself, Ruyi warns and wrenches my arm so hard that I cry out. Beg pardon, Your Highness, I pant, trying to breathe through the pain. There is a difference between living the suffering and reading about it. She stares down at me for a long moment, contemplating this, then turns away. Let her go. Ruyi drops me and I clutch my arm to my body, cradling it. The pain throbs to the beat of my heart. Keep your spirited nature, the princess says with cold amusement. You will need it for what I require of you. I do not understand. It surprised me when I realized you had caught the eye of another in the palace, she continues. I had my cousin followed when he was moved to the residences. My guards report to me that each night he leaves at the hour of the ghost and returns at the hour of the thief. To visit you. There's a sour taste in my mouth. I swallow. This is about Kung. Threads tying me to him and him to her, the threads of fate pulsing between us. The princess approaches, her shadow falling over me. Tell me, Ning. Are you working with him? What is he planning? I don't know. I shake my head. I met him in the market the day of the start of the competition. She grabs my chin, twisting it until my neck is bent back, forcing me to look up at her. If you are lying to me, she says calmly, I will have your family killed. The only threat that will undo me.
He told me he knows the Emperor is dead.
The princess regards me without emotion, as if considering all the splendid ways in which she could silence me. I force myself to hold her gaze, to speak slowly and carefully. You know I am telling you the truth. She lets me go and I close my eyes.
Tell no one of his lies,
she says quietly.
You will get close to him, discover what he has planned, and report back to me. If you provide me with useful information, then I will reward you after the competition and provide what you need for your family. If you provide me with nothing useful, then...
The threat is clear. She wants me to be her spy. She wants me to use Kung in order to find out his father's plans. I have little choice but to agree. I have everything to gain and everything to lose. I nod. I'll do it.
Then you should leave soon. The hour of the ghost approaches.
The princess reaches up and breaks a branch from the plum tree. Some of the blossoms are already wilting. Nothing beautiful lasts forever,